time, weather, and
highways.
Veteran of three foreign wars, entrepreneur, and warrior poet, Tony Arterburn takes on the issues facing our country, civilization, and planet. This is the Arterburn Radio Transmission.
Understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and that's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else. It's about freedom.
Parapolitics and precious metals. This is the official broadcast of the apocalypse, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Arterburn Radio Transmission, broadcasting in defiance of globalist goblins, the neocons, the New World Order, the Build Back Better, Biden, Beelzebub, Baphomet, Bilderberg, Bohemian Grove, Bankster Bunch. I'm in studio with Beans the Brave, who I had a caller into the shop last week. They asked, Is Beans the Brave, is that your dog, right? Yeah, that's my 12 and a half pound. Well, sometimes a little over, but we won't mention that. That's my Chihuahua mix, my best friend, spiritual guru, head of security, and part-time producer. Depends on if she wants to nap or not during the show, but we appreciate her being here. It's the 18th of April. 2024. I just got done with the great David Knight on his program. I go on there every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time, and it's always a fun conversation. It's so fun. If you watch me on David, if you ever wonder, like, what do we plan that, or do we just that's just us going. That's just a conversation. I usually show up like a minute before. And say, I read a couple, this is an article I saw, and he'll say, I saw this too, and then we'll just do the show. And it makes you a better broadcaster. You get somebody that's so skilled like that, with David Knight, just an intellect like that, it makes you a better broadcaster. So I'm always, now that I'm doing the show on Thursdays, I'm ready to go. Like, I can just do this. I'm already warmed up. This is easy compared to 30 minutes with Mr. Knight. So I'll be sure and check those out, and I'm going to add that to the podcast feed as well. Well, where do we start? Where do you guys want to start off? Should I talk? Do we want to talk about the election? Do you want to talk about politics? I don't. I'm just done with this. Like, it's just, this whole thing is so ridiculous. We're not bringing up the issues. Obviously, we've got this sideshow reality TV garbage going on. I'm just done with it. And it's sickening. It's that we've fallen this far in this country to have, you know, one side's persecuting the nominee of a major party, which you always knew was going to be the Republicans that had, if there was any party that was going to get persecuted and held down and has no way of fighting the establishment, it's going to be the Republican Party or the Republican nominee, because it's the party most tied, at least right now, to what you would consider the people that, you know, work and keep the lights on and pay the taxes. And, you know, and again, there's some good Democrat people out there, but that's a demographic shift that happened a long time ago. It's one of the reasons why Joe Biden, you see, like, people giving me these clips, like, you see Joe Biden in 2007, he was talking about a secure border. Well, of course he was. He was placating to people that are no longer alive. That's what they did. They don't believe in anything. the same reason Barack Obama said that marriage was between a man and a woman. He was placating to those older blue dog Democrats, the Reagan Democrats, from years and bygone era, people that thought that FDR was a hero. You know, those people are gone. They're mostly gone. Unfortunately, it was some of the best Americans, and they were just placating to them. They didn't believe any of those things. They don't believe in anything. They're nihilist. They're Luciferian nihilists. They believe in something. They believe in not necessarily a higher power, but you understand what I'm getting at. They serve a different master. I think that's pretty apparent. What you think? So yeah, those people were placating. There's no politics anymore. So they persecute the guy. The headlines on Drudge and Trump's going through all these trials and everything else. And again, my eyes glaze over. You know, we went through this and we had the vote for the secure border was 2016, and I didn't get a secure border. I got a new world order. So why am I doing this again? I mean, I don't know. I'm just pretty sick of it. You can turn me off if you want, but if Trump's reelected, does President Fauci automatically get inaugurated, or do I have to wait? Do we do this again? Or is he playing 4D chess? I have people send me stuff all the time. They're like, oh, well, the Patriot's in control. Really? Can we stop doing that? It is absolutely nauseating. Please don't do that. Please don't fall for that. I think the key is local. It's your family. It's closer to the earth, and brace for impact, because this country goes into $1 trillion in debt every 90 days, folks. $1 trillion in debt every 90 days. It took us from 1776 to 1980 or so to go $1 trillion in debt. We do it every 90 days. And Speaker Johnson, don't you love it at the end of the road? You get this Ned Flanders kind of guy. Why do we always produce these people in this country? This is Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. He's a wartime speaker. Did you know that? Well, pray tell, Mike, what war is it? What war did you vote on? What declaration of war was voted on and approved by the people? You're a wartime wartime speaker of what? The war against us? The war against the people of the United States? Well, I'd agree with that. There's a war on free speech. There's a war on personal sovereignty. There's a war on free markets. There's a war on sanity. There's a war on the rule of law. So yeah, Mike, I guess you are. I guess you're a wartime speaker. Let's put this article up. Let's talk a little bit about war. The dogs of war. This is antiwar.com. Speaker Johnson unveils $95 billion foreign military aid bills. The legislation includes $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion to support Israel, and $8 billion for Taiwan and other spending in the region. Well, those of you who have paid attention to my show, it's a little different. I know people are going to turn it off because I'm not doing the mind control talking points to set up artificial teams to make it easy for you. But this bill makes no sense. And again, wartime, what are you talking about? What does Ukraine have to do with the United States Constitution? What does Ukraine have to do with my security? Well, it has a lot to do because we parked a lot of bioweapons and laundered money and, you know, Burisma, and we had to pay off all these political families and, you know, from the Romneys to the Pelosis, you know, the Bidens, they always got to get their take out of Ukraine. It's a big kitty, right? It's a big money laundering kitty. Plus you get to bolster the military industrial complex. You get to agitate foreign powers like Russia with it. So yeah, Ukraine, I guess, does involve us, but for all the wrong reasons. It has nothing to do with to make us safer or to secure this country. It has everything to do with to bring us into a wider war. So of course we're going to fund it. We're going to continue to fund the T-shirt man. A wonderful democracy, by the way, having all the opposition leaders jailed. On Wednesday, House Speaker Mike Johnson unveiled three foreign military aid bills for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. It's $95 billion. A bill that was passed by the Senate, although Israel will get a boost in military aid, some of the economic aid for Ukraine is in the form of repayable loans. Good luck on getting that back. However, reports say Kiev is not actually expected to pay it back. That's of course, it's funny, you know, after World War One, you know, Woodrow Wilson, the banker's president, put in there by J.P. Morgan, and that was a very sophisticated election, 1912, to get Woodrow Wilson, this so-called intellectual, the only PhD president. We put him in. We had to run Teddy Roosevelt as a third party in the Bull Moose to siphon off votes from Taft so they could install Wilson. He was the perfect. He was the banker's president. And they finally got him in. He got a second term. He ran on. What did he run on, folks? 1916, Woodrow Wilson. He ran on. He kept us out of war. And what's the first thing he does when he gets a second term? He plunges the United States into World War One. One of the reasons is because he had a handler. That handler was a man named Colonel Mandel House. He was not a colonel, but he lived in the White House. They called him Colonel House, but he was not a colonel. He worked for the bankers, and he was to monitor Woodrow Wilson. And what Woodrow Wilson did is he helped the United States create loans and the conditions for loans for the Allies, so-called, in World War One. By the way, the head of the central bank in Germany was Max Warburg, and the head of the central bank in the United States was Paul Warburg. They were brothers. And of course, we went to war, and it was a banker's war, and there was a lot of money borrowed. So by the time Cal Coolidge, they called him Silent Cal in the 1920s, when he was he actually took over because Warren Harding died in office, and Silent Cal Coolidge became president, and he wanted the money back. And he said, well, they hired the money, didn't they? He actually wanted the loans repaid, which is, everyone was aghast. Like, we loan the money. We don't expect it back. Of course we do. That's what you're supposed to do. But that's not, again, all of it's a ruse to siphon off money from you, to take it away from you, the producers, these government leeches, and they put it into wars. And this is all part of the power structure, folks. This is how all of this works. This is money laundering 101, the creation of money to fund things that do not make you safer, do not have anything to do with national security, nothing to do with the United States Constitution except the erosion of it. Absolutely sickening. The Israel bill totals $26 billion, the majority of which will go to supporting the slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza and replenishing air defenses following Iran's reprisal attack. It includes $9 billion in humanitarian aid, which Democrats said was necessary for them to support Johnson's effort. Can I ask a question here? Israel and related companies own about 75% of the NASDAQ. Why are we giving them money? Does anybody really know? They have 300 nuclear weapons. A first-rate economy, a first-rate air force that they never almost ever have to use, except when they're attacking things like, going into Syria or destroying Iraq, having a nuclear energy facility. That was called Osiris. I think it was in 1982. The Israelis just went and just bombed it. I mean, I know that we're supposed to see, everything's an inversion. You say, like, Iran, can anybody name a country that Iran has invaded? No, but see, what you're doing right now too, if you're listening to this and you never heard me, you're going to say, why is he defending Iran? I'm not. I don't, a pox on both their houses. I don't care about any of this stuff. I want out of the Middle East. I want, that's godforsaken. I want out of all that stuff. I'm an American. I live in the United States of America. I fought for this country. Nobody asked me how I feel about Paraguay. I always get this, like, well, you know, what do you think about it? Are you going to support Israel? Nobody asked me if I support Panama. It's like, what's the latest on Argentina's foreign policy? Where do you stand on Venezuela, Tony? Nobody ever asked me that. It's always this thing, right? We have to be centered. This is a neocon. This is what this is. This is a neocon distraction. This is the seven countries in 5 years that Wesley Clark was talking about when he came back and went through the Pentagon after 9/11. They were going to hit 7 countries in 5 years. What did that have to do, not only one with 9/11, but what does that have to do with the United States security? Look at where we are now. We've just wasted. And the boondoggles, the grift, the theft, the criminality of the trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that we spent on what in the Middle East? I was part of that, by the way. Did it make you safer? No, it completely bankrupted the nation. It rotated our military into oblivion. And then at the end of all this, I thought there was going to be, see, Paul Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Bill Kristol and all in Max Boot, which all these radio hosts on conservative talk. Why is conservative talk devolved into, if we're not bombing somebody, we're not great? And it always has to do with bombing somebody in the Middle East. Has anybody ever noticed that? Have you ever traced back the roots on that and just kind of seen where that comes from? It's to keep you distracted. But they put us in a position, we're going to democratize mankind. Remember, we're going to get the evildoers. We're going to democratize the Middle East. And they're going to greet us as liberators. Was I greeted as a liberator? I wish I had the Jeopardy music. I should have the Jeopardy music some here on my board. I could just what was shot at? What was IEDs? Liberators, huh? But that's how they think. That's the Trotskyite. Gosh, you know, I'm going to do a whole paratruther on the origins of the conservative movement in the United States and how it was hijacked. It's a complete inversion of what it actually is supposed to be. I heard a radio host, a popular one, once say that that George Washington was wrong with his farewell address about staying out of a foreign entanglement and not having these alliances that would drag us into war. They used to read the farewell address in Congress up until the 1930s. And there was a popular host, I heard him say it, that George Washington was wrong because we have to intervene, because that's where the so-called conservative movement went. Well, I think that's pretty telling. That's how you end up where you go $1 trillion in debt every 90 days. And we took our eye off the ball. We didn't fight the culture war. We didn't rebuild the republic after the fall of the Soviet Union. We went on the Crusades, and I think this is what you're paying for. But $26 billion to Israel. For what? And again, why is this our concern? I'm asking the tough questions, because you're supposed to be on a side here. You're supposed to be rah-rah, especially if you want a lot of viewers. You want a lot of clicks. And of course, over $8 billion will go towards spending in the Asia Pacific to prepare for a future war with China, including a few billion in military aid for Taiwan. U.S. has consistently sold weapons to Taiwan since severing relations with Taipei in 1979. You read that? Let's read that again. Let's highlight it. I talked about this last week. Over $8 billion will go towards spending in the Asia-Pacific to prepare for a future war with China, including a few billion in military aid for Taiwan. The U.S. has consistently sold weapons to Taiwan since severing relations with Taipei in 1979, but began providing unprecedented military aid last year, a move that significantly raised tensions with China. For those of you who missed the history lesson, we literally put in writing with Zygmunt Brzezinski on January 1st, 1979, that we had officially recognized a one-China policy. Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger did it verbally with Mao in 1972. Taiwan used to be known as Formosa. That's where Chiang Kai-shek fled in 1949 when the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds set up the communist revolution in China. So the nationalist leader, Chiang Kai-shek, fled to Formosa, which is Taiwan. And all through the Cold War, Taiwan was a Cold War ally. Then we flipped the script and we opened China in what was called triangular diplomacy. It was a idea from Richard Nixon carried out by Henry Kissinger to put a wedge between the Soviet Union and Red China. It worked, but Taiwan was the bargaining chip. So let me ask you a question, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't think that there's some seriousness in the war clouds that are being built up by our military-industrial complex and our ruling class because they backed themselves into a corner. See, it was all well and good that all these same minds, it was all well and good that we sold our manufacturing out. We sold out the American worker. I talked about that today on David Knight's show. December 11th, 2001, 90 days after 9/11, George W. Bush gives China most favored trading status, opens them up to the WTO. Right after that, we lose 55,000 factories and 1 in 3 manufacturing jobs. We gave it to China. The Clintons gave missile technology to China. We would give missile technology to the Israelis. The Israelis would sell it to China. Everybody's been selling stuff to China. Everybody's been giving things to China. We gave away everything to China. Gave it away. They didn't have to steal it. We gave it away. Our leaders gave it away. We gave away the industrial base, the manufacturing marvel of mankind. This was the great betrayal of the American people by the political class. And now they want to reverse it by going to war with China? Over what? Something that we already ceded. We broke relations with Taiwan in 1979, folks. And now we're giving them an unprecedented amount of money. Why is that? It's a good question. These are war clouds, and these war pigs are going to, psychopathic are going to drag us in. Of course, you know, and they've picked like this hodge. It's a like a Goldilocks. This is World War III stuff. You have this, and I said this months and months ago after October 7th. This has nothing to do with Gaza. This has nothing to do with Hamas. This is language between nation states. Setting the stage. They're going to drag us in one way or another. If we can't get lobbied into it, we're going to get drug into it. One way or kicking and screaming, it appears, into some Middle Eastern cataclysm. For what? I'm going to read an article here at the end of the show from Michael Snyder about the price of gasoline. You want to know where the price of, everybody wants to know where the price of commodities and gold. Forget about that, folks, because we're going into some weird times with energy. You don't think that the oil companies are licking their chops right now? I tell you who's really licking their chops right now, credit card companies. Oh, they're loving it. They're about to make a windfall, unprecedented windfall, a transfer of wealth never seen before at the pump. You guys don't know about that. We'll talk a little bit about that. But this is what I'm talking about. We get stuck on World War III and foreign policies, but they're really doing it. They're really setting the stage for it. And you have to go step back and ask why. Now, you're going to be told a lot of patriotic nonsense, as Gore Vidal would say. You're going to be told a lot of things, and it's going to be mind control. It's going to get you to flip a script, and you're with so, and I'm going to put a flag on my Facebook profile or whatever. You know, you're going to take a side. But I promise you, it's all for nothing, and it's all terrible. Like, what does our, again, I asked the questions about Ukraine. I asked the questions about Israel. I asked the questions about Taiwan. What does that have to do with us? The answer is nothing. Nothing. We don't even secure our border here. I know I'm supposed to go to the polls again in 24 and vote for that secure border. I already did that. Already did that in 2016. Anybody with guts would have secured it. I said what I said. I'm not a 4D chesser, white hats, patriots in control person who has lost my grip on reality. I can read and I can remember things. And we didn't get that. So I'm not going back to the polls in 24. And you can't make me. I'm not going. I think I'll take Beans for a walk or something. Unless there's somebody cool like a sheriff to vote for or something. I'm done with that. And this is why the country's in such bad shape. We just keep tossing the thing back and forth between Tweedledee and Tweedledummer. All right, let's jump into some more headlines. You know what I'll do? I'm going to go to the Rockfin chat and we'll come back. And I'm debating on doing another foreign policy article. Maybe we'll do the stuff at the pump. Maybe we'll do that. And then there's something else on AI. There's one from Jim Rickards and I wanted to go, maybe I'll do that on a separate show. Cause I've just ranted I didn't expect to do that. I just ranted for a little bit. We'll definitely get into some commodity prices too. Let's go to the Rockfin chat. By the way, we're streaming live on freeworld.fm. Please go check out Free World. It's a lifeboat for free speech. And we've got so many great hosts over there. We're building it. Go check us out. I want to say hi to everybody on 9:30 a.m. The Answer San Antonio. My home station who still carries me. I definitely believe that I have the most unique view of any host over there. You got to get some variety. Don't be mad at me. See, Jason Barker's over in the Rockfin chat. By the way, Rockfin, ROKFIN.com on the America Unplugged channel. And Chris is in the chat. Gardner Goldsmith, the great guard Goldsmith, my good friend. Always supportive. It's good to see all of you. Thanks for... Yeah, dystopian dissident. No one ever mentions Operation Ajax and what resulted from the backlash. I will mention Operation Ajax. That's Mossadegh. Early 1950s, the overthrow of the leader of Iran. We installed the Shah. You notice something interesting about that? I don't know. They're not related, but the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, before he, quote, fell out of a window at Bethesda Naval Hospital. He was the first Secretary of Defense, I believe, too. And he had a problem with our foreign policy, with the creation of our aid to Israel and other things. He thought that would be a really bad idea. He thought that that it would open up and drive a wedge between Iran and the West. And you got to understand where this country was post-World War II. But James Forrestal was reading the actual classic, the Greek classic Ajax, when he was pushed or whatever, fell. I mean, you do the math. James Forrestal was killed, folks. If you can go back and look through history and see what happened for yourself. But in my opinion, there was something, he knew something, right? And that's James Forrestal. And that was the book that he was reading, was Ajax. You only hear that here on the Arterburn radio transmission. Just a little thing that my mind, that's the stuff, that's the little tidbits that I pick up. And then when somebody brings that up, I talk about it later, but good job. Thanks for bringing Mossadegh up. Because that's called blowback. But we always do. We always intervene somewhere. And then why do they hate us? You know? But again, has nothing to do with actual American security. All right, let's check out this article from Michael Schneider. Let me shut down this other screen. This is on LouRockwell.com. This is why the price of gasoline could soon double. Michael Schneider, the Economic Collapse blog. Can you imagine paying $7 for a gallon of gasoline? Well, I guess in California you already do. It could soon happen because it appears that Israel is about to strike Iran, and that is likely to cause events in the Middle East to spiral completely out of control. Right now, approximately one-fifth of all oil used in the world goes through the Strait of Hormuz. An apocalyptic war in the region could potentially close the Strait of Hormuz until the conflict is resolved one way or the other. In addition, oil infrastructure could be destroyed in Iran and other nations in the Middle East as the fighting rages, and that could substantially reduce global oil production for an extended period of time. Our way of life depends on cheap oil, and so if a major regional war in the Middle East causes the price of oil to go skyrocketing, that is going to deeply affect us all. Well, he's so right, because we're not paying attention to that. Folks, the Biden administration dumped millions of barrels of oil into the ecosystem, into the economic system, to temporarily lower the price in the second year of Biden's presidency, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Well, the price is up, and so they're not buying anymore to replenish their own stock, because when they buy, it's going to raise the price because demand goes up. And I see this only getting worse because, again, you know, the economy is going to suffer, but there's going to be a few that make a windfall. By the way, countries like Iran and the petroleum-rich nations are going to do very well. Even if some of their stuff is, the price of oil goes up, then they do well. So you're not hurting your enemies that way either. On Monday, the average price of a gallon of gasoline in the United States was just $3.63. Even though the average price of a gallon of gasoline has risen more than 20 cents in a month, I would still consider that to be a very low level, especially compared to what is eventually coming. Yeah, it's up 4 cents a week from a week earlier. One expert that was interviewed by MarketWatch is warning that the average price of gasoline in the U.S. could hit $5.40 this summer. This expert estimated that a spike in oil prices pushing U.S. gasoline to $5.40 a gallon would make a recession later in 2024 a genuine possibility. Oh, you think so? I think it's been estimated, and I heard this a long time ago going into the fall of 08, and I remember this because I was 28 years old and I was running a high-volume convenience store, gasoline. I mean, it had everything. It was part of my family's holdings, and I was running it as a part owner, and we were doing about 250,000 gallons a month in gasoline. And it just start watching those credit card fees keep going up, keep going up, keep going up. And then you realize, then you hit $3 and then $4 a gallon. And all of a sudden there's this crescendo where it just kind of starts to taper off. And that's when people are unable to do anything anymore. Right. So the wheels and all the mechanisms of a consumer economy and the money velocity starts to die. But again, if you have economic problems accompanied with a war, it's going to cause both inflationary issues and deflationary issues at the same time. That same expert also warned that the price of oil reaches $125 a barrel, it could push the U.S. economy into a recession. Well, yeah. Crude prices are our chief concern, but we are a long way from $125 a barrel, a level of West Texas Intermediate oil that would almost certainly cause a recession if sustained. Gasoline prices are the transmission mechanism between Mideast conflict and the U.S. economy. When pump prices increase quickly, consumers must cut back on other spending. That's exactly right. Personally, I think such a projection is wildly optimistic. If Israel and Iran start lobbing thousands of missiles at one another, we could easily see the price of oil surpass $150 a barrel. And it is likely that the average price of gasoline in the U.S. would shoot past $7 a gallon. And if nuclear weapons are used in the Middle East, there is no telling what might happen. Well, that's the dream. That's the dream of the neocons are licking their chops. They're ready for this. They're ready for the apocalyptic showdown. That's what they want. That's what they've been pushing. Every so-called conservative think tank, you know, right down to almost every conservative radio host pushing this. Even subconsciously, maybe they don't even know that they're doing it. They're pushing it. Right now, the financial markets are waiting to see if Israel chooses to retaliate. If the Israelis strike Iran and oil infrastructure is targeted, that will definitely send oil prices up. If Israel does retaliate and it becomes a full-fledged conflict, that's a different story. And maybe Iran's platforms, refineries are taken out, and that would send prices up. This is from the analyst. And Michael Snyder says, I think that is what is going to happen. At this moment, it is being reported that Israel is preparing to retaliate. When that occurs, the price of oil will go nuts, and people all over the U.S. will blame Israel for the high price of gasoline. No, not really. They'll blame Iran. And I think that's the whole point, right? Because Iran is connected to Russia. right? Iran is three times the size of Iraq. Iran is oil rich. You only have to look at the plan that they've had, the plan that was hatched by the Bush administration, which is really the neocons, that after and before 9/11, but especially after the seven countries in 5 years. You got to go look at what Wesley Clark said that they were planning on September 12, 2001. They're not done here yet. And I think they're throwing Hail Marys. It's like the dollar is losing purchasing power at a rapid rate, probably not expected. You have the emergence of the BRICS nations. Folks, Gerald Celente is right. When all else fails, they take you to war. You guys see this? Where are the adults? I keep asking this. They used to have off-ramps for this kind of stuff, and there used to be like summits. Hell, we even had, we used to have, gosh, we have the worst like entrepreneurs and CEO. I don't even call them entrepreneurs, whatever these figureheads or Silicon Valley degenerates and weirdos that we have that aren't even, they're not the entrepreneurs of old, like Henry Ford. Henry Ford, like in World War One or leading up to that, he tried to send out like an envoy. He chartered a ship and tried to get people like of different backgrounds and with influence to go and try to create an environment for peace. No one does that. And that was a private citizen who just happened to be an industrialist. Like, we don't have any of those. There's no off-ramps anymore. They don't have an off-ramp for peace in Ukraine. We just have crazy, like, peak fluoride people screaming to, you know, we're gonna raise a rainbow flag in Moscow tomorrow. You know, that's they don't care what happens. Nuclear war, it doesn't matter. We got to get there. They took the vaccine chip out and put the war chip in the back of their NPC head, and they're ready for a total annihilation. That war is sewn up for them. So we're not even talking about peace there. We're not talking about peace here. Nobody's meeting for, there's no summits. Where in the hell is the United Nations? I thought that, you know, I thought they were about peace. I'm doing this tongue in cheek, folks. The United Nations building was built on a Rockefeller piece of property. You know what the United Nations building used to be? It was a slaughterhouse. So it's kind of apropos. It was a slaughterhouse. That was the original location of the United Nations building. Where is that? Where is that entity right now? No one. That was what was sold to us. After World War II, we had to give up sovereignty. We had to join this supranational body. We had to be part of the United Nations to end all wars. Isn't that why? Wait a minute. Wait, we did this before. This was League of Nations with Woodrow Wilson. I thought it was the war to end all wars. I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you're really paying attention and you know anything about history, it's really weird that no one wants peace. No one. Anywhere. Weird, huh? Kind of in that season. Yeah. Iran has steeply raised oil exports, the main source of its revenue during the Biden administration, after they were severely reduced due to measures taken by the Trump administration. The White House has argued it isn't encouraging Iran to raise exports and is enforcing sanctions. Lower Iranian exports would lead to a further rise in oil prices and the cost in gasoline in the U.S., which would be a politically sensitive issue. Instead of using their oil money to fund terror organizations, the Iranians could have lived in luxury. But to be honest, Iran could have been one of the most prosperous countries in the entire planet. But instead, they have foolishly chosen a much different path. Well, can I be on nobody's side here? And having my whole life just having to constantly concentrate on where 26% of the world's oil output comes from. Can we just move away from that? Can we just, maybe we do our own domestic drilling. We look for other ways. It's 24%. It's 24% of the world's output total in the region. I looked that up when I was 20, because I was like, does all the oil come? How does it, it's like majority? It's not the majority. It's 24%. But it takes 90% of our foreign policy focus. should put on the Jeopardy music again. Why is that, Tony? Why are we constantly focused there? It's kind of weird, huh? You do the math. Yep, 1/5 of all the oil used goes through the Strait of Hormuz. I remember my dad talking to me about this in late 90s. This exact scenario, by the way, like everything that's happening right now, like this exact scenario. 1/5 of all the world goes through the Strait of oil goes through the Strait of Hormuz. We are in uncharted territory, says the author, Michael Snyder. And we could soon see a level of panic in the financial marketplace that we haven't seen in a very long time. Meanwhile, economic conditions in the U.S. just continue to deteriorate. Says, earlier today, I was saddened to learn that even Tesla has decided to use mass layoffs. 10% of its global workforce is going to be laid off. Things are definitely not good now, but they will get a whole lot worse if a major regional war erupts in the Middle East. It takes energy to make products, transport products, and sell products. The price of oil has an enormous impact on literally every sector of our entire economy. If an apocalyptic war in the Middle East were to cause the price of oil to double, it would send us into an horrific economic tailspin. So let's hope for the best, but let's prepare for the worst. Well, I like, again, I don't like doing doom and gloom. I just look around and I go, is anybody paying attention to this? They literally have there's no prospects for peace and nobody's calling for that. There's no summits. Where are the summits? Where are the leaders in this world? When you go back to the 1980s, you had Pope John Paul II, you had Margaret Thatcher, you had Ronald Reagan. I mean, okay. And even we were lucky because they had Mikhail Gorbachev that was head of the, what Reagan called one time, the evil empire, the Soviet Union. And that was the big power stuff. Basically nothing happened on the planet unless those four people said so. Now you had the premier in China at the time, but they weren't anything like they are today. They were a fledgling power. China had nuclear weapons in 1964. Because of their direct ties to the Soviet Union. But they really weren't an economic... We had to build them up first, and that was post-Cold War. That's when we really, after Tiananmen Square, that's when we really started to open up our markets for China. But nothing really happened unless, again, Reagan, Pope John Paul II, Thatcher, and Gorbachev allowed it. Not really. We're in a free fall now. There's nobody in charge. I guess you could say the leaders now of the world are. I mean, Putin has some degree of leadership somewhere. Xi Jinping, right? Is it the people you want in charge? There's always a vacuum. And as our country's gotten more corrupt, and of course, as we have the duopoly of the two-party system and the stranglehold on our politics, we don't fight back with, you know, we have in the United States and especially in places like Texas, we have the Republican Party. And unfortunately, they neutralize all of your outrage and turn it into nothing. And that's been going on for so many years now. It's starting to really show. So these are open questions, folks. Watch out at the pump. Strange times. I could definitely buy that. And then it won't matter. Like, you know, it's not just, there's a human cost to rising prices. I think it was the movie, The Big Short, you know, and I think it was Brad Pitt's character, and he stops them from celebrating that they're right about this collapse. I forget the scene, but he was like, you people die. Like, this is going to cause death in this country. You know, people on fixed income, people that have to choose between meals and medicine, and, you know, the central bank, the Federal Reserve, just prints money into oblivion and devalues the currency. And people on fixed income, those are the first people to be hit by economic uncertainties, inflation, shortages, rising prices. It's not just, it's going to hurt. It kills. So why don't we have anybody calling for peace? Well, you're not going to get Speaker Johnson. He says he's a wartime speaker. That's funny. You're my age, Mike. Why didn't you go fight in any of the wars that you supported? Boy, there's so many chicken hawks with that same mentality. I see you guys from 1,000 miles away. They're all over our politics. They're all over the radio. They're all in TV. They're my age. You love war so much. Why didn't you fight in them? How do you live with yours? How do you, as a man, like, how can you square that? How can you like war, but you didn't go? but he's a good church going man. All right. One last article. It's been a different kind of show. Let's cover a little bit of headlines. Oh, I talked about on David Knight's show today. The Bank of Zimbabwe. Now, if you know anything about fiat currency and how it's been a laughing stock, Zimbabwe got into such trouble over, I think it was in the 90s and so on. They had the trillion, they had a trillion dollar note, like they had a trillion Zimbabwe currency units. And that was like the laughing stock. It was always, you're going Zimbabwe. Well, Zimbabwe learned from that. And they recreated a new currency. They have a gold-backed currency now, and they have said implicitly that we will not create more currency units than is backed by our reserves of gold. That's Zimbabwe. If only the U.S. would learn. And I said this too on David Knight's show. And these are some key things to take away from the economic news from today. The Federal Reserve, the people that make the money, the people that literally make the money, had a balance sheet loss of $948 billion last year. They have a net loss, operating loss, on the books of $948 billion. Now, if you make the money, I know I'm asking, is my question too simple, or do I have to have all these complicated theorems and algorithms, and I have to run it through three different think tanks to get the answer? Do it to run it through that machine, the Whopper on War Games with Matthew Broderick? Do we have to run it through Joshua's the machine to get to this? What is it? How do you lose $948 billion on your balance sheet when literally you create the money? That's pretty bad. That's like having casinos that go bankrupt. How do you do that? How do you bankrupt a casino? The house wins. I mean, what did you do? These are all very good questions. All right. One more article, and then we'll get out of here. And this is something that I think really is going to be if you tune into my show for parapolitics and precious metals, but a silver lining, if you will. Let's put this on the screen. If you're searching for value, you want to see something cool, this isn't something that isn't talked about a lot. This is on Kitco. So while we're talking about high gas prices and talking about economic uncertainty, I get all that. And it is a strange time. But there are also little stories like this where it pique your interest. Like, okay, well, what do I need to be setting aside? Well, here's something to look at. Kitco, silver to see second highest deficit in 20 years. A record industrial demand rises 9% in 2024, says the Silver Institute's World Silver Survey. So what this means, folks, that the amount of silver that is above ground, and I'm scrolling through the article now, Metal Focus has noted that the industrial demand continues to dominate the silver market and is expected to hit another record high this year, rising 9%. And again, this is raising the deficit to over 200 million ounces. that means that there's not enough. They have to go into what's already above ground and in the supply, reaching in there to make all the industrial uses. Jewelry being one of them, but industrial like solar, like batteries, right? And of course, you know, there's 40 pounds of silver in a Tomahawk missile. You talk about defense related. This is going to be, I think this is where there's going to be a tipping point where the exchanges and the monetary holdings of physical silver will start to show that what we've long suspected is a lot of these paper markets don't have it. They can't really move it. Physical silver will not be delivered on demand because it can't be. And then this whole thing gets reset. So I think silver is cheap right now, not investment advice. It just is. Because I don't have to tell you investment advice. You can just go look at the price charts. But it's supposed to be, again, estimated for this year, it's up 9%. There was a, last year was 184 million ounces that was a deficit in 2023. So we're definitely in uncharted territory when it comes to the actual supply above ground. The gold and silver ratio is messed up, but tune in to the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show on Mondays. I'll be live this Monday at 11 a.m. Central Time on Free World, on Rockfin, on my Twitter, at Tony Arterburn, or my ex or whatever it is now. But check that. I'll go into a little bit more on that and some other things that are affecting the metals and cryptocurrency markets on Monday. But stay tuned for America Unplugged on Saturday. That's the show I do with Billy Ray Valentine and the legendary Don Jeffries, author of Hidden History, every Saturday over on Rockfin. Subscribe to the podcast channel. Find us. The new Paratruther is out. We have the new Paratruther is out. We did one. This is this volume two on our series of UFOs. We did one on the moon. It's a fun conversation. Myself, Chris Graves, Mr. Anderson. Good talk. It's up on all channels. Go check that out. It's just if you want to plug that in, it's an hour and a half of us going back and forth, talking a little bit about some of the anomalies and weird stuff with the moon. Definitely a great way to escape all of these headlines. All right. And of course, we're sponsored by Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Go and check out the Wolf Pack. Go to wolfpack.gold. We've surpassed 1,000 members. More and more people joining, and that makes us stronger. We can get better deals for everybody. So go check out wolfpack.gold. No order too big, too small. We got you. We'll take care of you. IRA rollovers, 401ks, the whole deal. I'll take care of that. And you're going to talk most likely to me when you go through the system. So go check us out. And of course, our other sponsor is Legal Shield. 87,000 new IRS agents, folks, for less than a cup of coffee a day. You can protect your family, IRS audits, lawsuits, being able to speak to an attorney unlimited, many things as you want, have them review documents, get your will done, keep the state out of any, because we all gonna pass away. That's, we all owe a death, right? So might as well have your will done. That's an easy thing to do with a Legal Shield membership. You go to peoplesprotectionplan.com, peoplesprotectionplan.com. A great service. I've been with them for 20 plus years. I have it on all my businesses, my personal stuff. I wouldn't go a day without it. So go check out all the cool things that it does. peoplesprotectionplan.com. From Beans and Brave, myself and all the crew here at Wise Wolf in Branson, we'll see you next week. You take care of each other. End of transmission.